Hi, I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And I'm Maya Grants.
And this is The Sauce, the culture and politics podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the stuff you love.
And we are going to continue on the cult tip today as we say goodbye.
Farewell.
245. Farewell.
But you know what? Don't farewell. No, I hope he does not farewell at all. But indeed,
oh,
we have a
man.
Lot to be drinking for this week.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I have been like reading all the articles about like all the really intense, horrible social humiliation and legal and financial trouble that the Trump family is going to get into. And it's like, just put it all in my veins, just inject it directly into my heart.
I hope it all comes to pass. In the meantime, we're going to take a look back and connect all of the stuff we've been through to all of the stuff about cults that we talked about last time.
All right, let's do it.
All right, before we really talk about the Trump cult, let's talk about how we're doing. Maya, how have you been? What are you drinking?
I am drinking my basic bitch vodka and soda with lime. We had a real climate change January this past week, and it's stressful. It's unsettling when it's 84 degrees in January. It's unsettling to the spirit. You know, other than that, we're getting by, just trying to figure out when my parents and Ben's parents can get COVID vaccines. You know, the huge.
Hopefully soon.
Hopefully very soon.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are in that boat right now. My dad is qualified. He can have one. He just has only gotten a busy signal every time he's called the VA. Yeah, so we'll see. He'll get it soon enough. I am being a lot less basic in my drinking, I have to say. Not that I'm judging. I'm trying to make a hard egg cream.
It's working. That is, it's foaming.
It didn't foam nearly as much as I would have liked it to. So egg cream is a classic Brooklyn drink for any listeners who may not be familiar. Classic New York, actually.
It does not involve eggs.
There is no eggs. And there's no cream, actually. It's supposed to be made with milk. I used soy creamer, so I don't know if that's partially responsible for the poor head I got on it. It's not foaming very
Yes, it
much.
Is. Yes, it is.
But I put rum and a little bit of creme de coco in it to make it alcoholic. And I used the authentic Fox's You Bet chocolate syrup because it is not an egg cream if you do not use
wow.
that.
Wow.
So we'll see wow. how this turns out.
It's she just spilled all over herself. That was really cute. But it was also really cute that Rebecca came back with her drink and she said, what's the Jewishest of boozes? And I said Slivovitz. I feel like it has to be very strong, like strip your inside strong, but also a fruit brandy.
I mean, that's really, that is our heritage when it comes
yes.
to drinking.
Yes.
It's either that or like kosher wine or something,
oh.
which is, yeah, not yeah. the best.
All right. So, let's see if she can achieve a sip without spilling on yourself. Very good. Well done. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. This is my new Jewish drinking tradition, the hard egg cream. Maybe it'll catch on. And I'm doing great. I learned how to make an egg cream, which I'm very excited about. Now I have that. I also make my own half sour pickles.
Oh, all right.
Yes.
All right.
And what else? Oh, I've been saving schmaltz.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
We are saving the fat of every animal that we have in any way. We have, and we have different jars of the different fat. We have some leftover duck fat.
Okay, that's way too hipster for me.
Oh, bitch. Okay, look, all I'm saying is when we have the duck fat and we make potatoes, we use the duck fat.
That does sound amazing.
So good.
No, I just make chicken stock all the time. And when I skim off the fat, I keep the chicken fat because I'm at this age where I feel like something in my heritage is singing to me from deep within and saying, you have to have a jar in the back of the refrigerator that's labeled schmaltz and use that instead of butter when you cook.
Okay. Can I recommend a use for that schmaltz?
By all
which
means.
Which we actually learned not from the Jews, but from the Chinese, because as you know, I'm in a mixed marriage and I've learned a lot of important food things from Cantonese cuisine. Putting chicken schmaltz in rice.
In rice?
It's so good. Yeah. Chicken schmaltz rice, which
You just mix the schmaltz up in the already cooked rice?
You cook it with the schmaltz. Like when you cook the rice.
Doesn't the fat separate?
No. It's awesome. It's rich. And you eat it with like a poached chicken and a little bit of scallion ginger sauce. It is the greatest thing that's ever happened.
You'll make that for me when someday this is all over and I can come visit.
Oh, God, someday.
I look forward to that. In the meantime, I mostly use my schmaltz to make refried beans.
Ooh, very good.
At the beginning of quarantine, for some reason, we bought all of these dry pinto beans.
I know why. Because we were all like, oh!
Yeah, no, we didn't know what was going to happen. It was like, we better get a lot of non-perishable things. And Matt was like, we have to get beans. And I was like, we never cook beans from dried beans. But he insisted. And so we got like a giant bag of these pinto beans. And so I started making refried beans and using the schmaltz. And I feel like between coming from San Diego and being a Jew that I've really gotten in touch with my heritage.
Absolutely. But guys, this isn't a cooking show.
No, that's true.
This is a show about culture and politics. And it brings me so much pleasure that we are ending 45's administration with a two-parter on cults. I feel like that has tickled me deeply all week.
I'm so glad it gives you that pleasure.
It really does.
I know that cults are an interest of yours. You've studied and researched cults a lot.
Yes.
And I do feel like this framing of the past 4 years and what we've witnessed really kind of draws together a lot of the stuff you and I have been saying about Trumpism and just the various events we've seen. We've talked about trolling.
Yes. We've talked about conspiracy theories. We've talked about the rise of incels.
And white supremacy and terrorism.
And actually, I reposted as the insurrection was going on. I was like, for all of our listeners or people who haven't listened yet, you might want to revisit these episodes. Like, we have been talking about this for so long. And I feel like right at this moment when all of these cult documentaries are so popular, it is the perfect framing in which to bid him adieu.
So let's do it.
Now, quickly, before we get into it, we need to revisit a couple of caveats. Our legal department, which we don't have, said that we had to revisit these caveats. So
yeah, this is the second episode in a two-parter about cults. Last time we talked about these documentaries, the two NXIVM documentaries, Seduced and The Vow, that were hugely popular. And we just sort of looked at what the pleasures are of these cult stories and how cults kind of seem to figure in our popular imaginary. And we opened that one, as we're about to now, by saying, let's be careful to remember that the term cult doesn't really have a definition, at least not one that corresponds with the way we're using it.
Right.
It's a commonly used word, and people everyone has their own idea of what exactly it means. But like sociologically speaking, there's no specific parameters for what constitutes a cult and what does not.
However, one thing I found extremely helpful, there's a psychologist named Steve Hassan who shows up in a lot of these cult documentaries, including ones about Scientology and some of the NXIVM ones. in the 70s, he ended up being a Moonie. And then when he got out, he became a psychologist about cults. And he has a website called Freedom of Mind, which I highly recommend. In my ongoing cult research, I ended up on that website fairly recently and saw that all of his recent blog posts were like, how to help your family deal with Trump's loss. How to deal with friends and family who believe in QAnon. Like, and I saw that he wrote a book called The Cult of Trump, where very early, like midway through Trump's presidency, he actually was invited to write a book about how these things connect. And I feel like he has a model of how to describe, like, what's a destructive cult. And again, he says, look, there are belief systems that you could say are, quote, cults, in that way that that word is kind of loosey-goosey and doesn't have this sort of specific definition. He says, what I'm talking about is destructive, mind-controlling organizations. And generally, they follow the model that he has articulated as the BITE model. It's easy to remember, the BITE model. And the BITE model involves four modes of control. Behavior control, information control, thought control, and emotional control. And he goes in a very detailed way into how each of these are constituted. So that's sort of, we're following him today.
Yeah, we're really borrowing that from him because it's a really useful way to look at the ways that Trump and his following constitute what we're going to go ahead and call a cult. It's a group that has a leader in which the leader, with the help of others in the group, controls your behavior, thoughts, emotions.
And information. And access information. To information. And,
yeah.
So
let's get into it.
Let's go.
Looking at the methods of control that cults use, one thing I noticed right away when watching the NXIVM documentaries, I noticed it right off the bat. I watched The Vow first. Was like in the first like 30 seconds, you're already going like, oh my God, that's like Trump. You start to see these analogies. I think one of the first thing that happens in The Vow is the guy who's a former cult member, a redeemed cult member, is talking about how he's taking a big risk by doing this and they're going to come and get him and sue him. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There you go. And this is actually the place where – so I read Hassan's book about Trump. Mm-hmm. And the thing that he said that struck me the most was he says that we're social animals and yet our brains, human brains, can only absorb so much new information at any one time. So a tactic that a cult leader will use is to just throw so much word garbage at you that your brain and your ability to critically go, okay, what does any of this mean, shuts down. And you just start behaving like the people around you because as social animals, we sort of mirror the appropriate behavior of everybody around us. And he said, like, so when Trump speaks nonsense, that's a tactic. That's a tactic he is deploying. Because once you say all that garbage, people's critical thinking facilities shut down.
Yes. And we talked about this already in regard to Keith Raniere and the NXIVM cult. And the weird way that you see these clips of him addressing the group, and you're like, wait a minute, everything he's saying, it's just nonsense. He's just talking, it doesn't make sense. He's not making
it. Contradicts each other. He says this thing that makes no sense next to this thing, but he says it right next to each other. If you sat there parsing it out, it's exhausting.
Or it's like, it's not leading to any actual point.
That's
like,
correct.
Like, you're like, where's this going? Where's this going? And it doesn't go anywhere. Or if it does, it's just the most mundane and trite sort of truth about life that like anyone could have come up with. And so you're left scratching your head saying, why do these cult members think that this person has great insight? And the answer would seem to be, yeah, what Hassan is talking about, which is that it's not that what he's saying is so smart and touches them so deeply or something like that, but rather they're so overwhelmed by this torrent of nonsense that they stop even trying to make sense of it.
Absolutely.
And that in itself is a method of control. Your brain just kind of shuts down and you just sort of go with the flow. But also, you noted that Trump punctuates his torrent of bullshit with these strong images.
Yes, and actually Hassan noted this. This was okay. Like my favorite thing that he wrote, that he throws all this language garbage at you, this word salad, and you're like, ah, and I can't, my brain is exhausted trying to make sense of this. He just said he didn't say it, but then he did say it, and I know that, and I can't, da-da-da-da-da. But then what he does is, as you're sort of melting, looking for an anchor, he uses extraordinarily strong, very visual, very provocative images that provide mental anchors for you. And that's what his followers grasp onto. So, build a wall, drain the swamp, crooked Hillary,
right, lock
Lion
her up.
Ted, lock mm-hmm. her up. So it's this total torrent of nonsense punctuated with very strong, very visually provocative images, and that gives you something to hold on to, and that's what you leave remembering. Mm-hmm. Like caravans, rapists, like whatever. It's like gives you that thing, and so when you leave, you don't leave thinking about the 30 minutes that made fucking no sense. You leave with that one image, and that's what that whole hour or 2 hour speech was. Lock her up. That's it.
Right, right. Another thing you mentioned about the sort of use of language and the way the cult leader presents himself is this preemptive management of critique. Yes. This before any criticism comes, they already are deflecting it.
Yes. And with Nexium, this is something that they track. Like, I know I'm going to be accused of sexually assaulting minors. So I'm going to talk about how all stories of sexually assaulting minors use really charged language and they're not true. We're like,
right.
He knows that people are going to come at him to the point where in the Nexium curriculum, they had a module called Why We're Not a Cult. Because they know that people are going to, like, accuse them of being a cult.
Yes.
So he's already managing what people are going to say, and he's ready. He's so ready because he knows it's coming.
Yes.
Trump obviously does this.
Yeah, for sure. One of the ways that he does it is to accuse others of what he knows he's done, or accuse them of having the flaws he has. As has often been noticed, that's what he does. Many people have pointed it out. Many people have said that Trump does this. And it, to me, seems like a form of that. He preempts whatever critique, or he thinks he's preempting it, by throwing it on someone else, like calling Joe Biden senile or calling Hillary a criminal or whatever. He knows he's going to be vulnerable. Whatever attack he knows he's going to be vulnerable to, he uses it to attack someone else.
And one thing that also we have not been the first and will not be the last to note is that it involves a lot of projection, right?
Yes.
So one of the very strange ways that Trump preemptively manages critique that finally the media figured out actually isn't a management of critique, but a confession of crime, yes. is by this, like, he says things that nobody else has said. And my favorite is when he said, people are accusing me of having had a series of mini strokes that I haven't. It's like, nobody said that. You are the first person to say that. But now we know what happened when you had to go to Walter Reed last year. Like, it was amazing. Oh my God.
He always tells on himself.
He always tells on himself, but he's doing it with this kind of thought control technique. So this is like what Hassan calls the thought portion of the BITE model mm-hmm. of thought control, is this creation of a map of reality. Like, I'm going to replace reality with my map of reality. A rejection of rational analysis. Mm-hmm. The forbidding of having critical questions. The alternatives to me are obviously illegitimate and evil. And this kind of us versus them flattening of language and the sort of hypnotism of garbage language. It's hypnotic. Yeah. It's a hypnotic technique.
And a lot of that harkens back to Umberto Eco's article called Ur-Fascism that I believe we talked about in a previous episode, in which Eco laid out what he saw as being the traits of fascism, the key characteristics that define a regime or party or whatever as being fascist. And so many of those are these: rejection of rational analysis, 100%. And of course, you see that. I mean, it would take us more than an episode to cite all the times that Trump has rejected rationality and rational analysis. Forbidding critical questions.
Yep.
Anyone who is critical, it gets immediately excoriated by Trump. It is just not accepted.
Yeah.
Obviously, labeling alternates as illegitimate or evil, and generally labeling everyone who's not on the inside as evil. Amazingly enough, that like flattening of language, that sort of corruption or simplifying of language, Umberto Eco talks about, and you also see in like 1984, that way that inhibiting language or draining the richness out of language and simplifying it has a controlling effect on people.
Yes.
And I think it has a really bigly controlling effect.
So all of this replacement of a map of reality, and I think particularly this insider versus outsider, us versus them, those people are evil. Anybody who believes something different is wrong, evil, bad, brings us to the E part of BITE, which is the emotional control.
Yeah.
Instilling the fear of enemies, extreme emotional highs and lows, inculcating irrational fears about questioning the leader. There's no good reason to leave. Like, some feelings are wrong. Like, that is all way some Trump cult stuff.
And yeah, the no good reason to leave. Anyone who leaves, there's something wrong with them.
Yes.
And we absolutely saw this in the NXIVM documentaries. It was, to me, one of the outstanding features and methods of control I saw there before I had read about this BITE model or anything. It was clear that one of the major techniques that Keith Raniere and his organization used was to control people's emotions and make them feel like if they weren't on board, if they weren't getting with the program, there was something wrong with them. And if they were experiencing feelings of discomfort with the stuff they were being asked to do or what they saw other people doing, if they were experiencing any kind of unease, that was their problem.
Yes. Yes. That was their problem to get over.
To get over. Exactly. And in order to get people to that place where they could accept all of this stuff and when it seems strange, turn their attention to fixing themselves.
Yes.
Like, it was gradual. He doesn't start off with like, I'm going to rape minors and you better say it's okay or there's something wrong with you. No one would join the group in that case, I hope.
Yeah.
But what we saw in the NXIVM stories was they start off just a little weird and work their way up.
That's
like,
right.
You come into your first weekend-long seminar, and they have these color-coded scarves that they're wearing that say their rank. And you do these strange rituals, like when you come in the morning, you greet and thank the picture of Keith Raniere, and you say, thank you, Vanguard. And they use language weirdly. They use words to mean things that don't mean what they mean.
That's huge. Also, like in Scientology, I love watching internal footage from Scientology things because you listen to them talk to each other and you're like, what?
None of that makes sense.
That's, yeah.
Right.
They're speaking another language, yeah.
That the language thing has a big role in divorcing you from the reality outside the cult.
That's right. Divorcing you from the map of reality.
Yeah, exactly. But it also is part of this just sort of getting you to accept things. Number one, on day one, it weeds out any of the people who aren't going to go for it, right? If you show up and you're like, no, I can't get over these weird things, then you weren't going to be susceptible. And so they don't want you. But it preps the cult members. It preps them from day one to be like, I'm going to think things are weird, but I have to
I'll be wrong.
Exactly. I have to suppress and ignore those thoughts because those thoughts are wrong.
And that's the thing that I think is very important is like you say, I'm not trusting my instincts.
Yes.
My instincts are telling me this, but the fact that my instincts are telling me this are just because of how I've been trained by a fucked up world. And what's really frustrating about that for me, I just have to briefly say, is that that's also part of various kind of opening up of like, the reason I have these instincts is because I've been raised under white supremacy, or the reason I have that these instincts or these discomforts is because I've been raised in a misogynist culture. So there's something about that that can be deployed by these people that it's very powerful to say, hey, the way you were raised and the way that you initially respond to this is not right. And because that's such a vulnerable and tender and very real thing, people can exploit it.
And we certainly see this with what Trump does, especially in regard to getting people to accept things that they normally wouldn't, and then sort of escalating that further and further to get them to accept more and more transgressive acts and behaviors.
And a huge part of that for me is the kind of fuck your feelings that when certain people have certain feelings, oh, you're worried about poor people. Oh, you're worried about like, fuck those feelings. And so if you have those feelings, fuck you too. And so if you do have those instincts and feelings, you're like, I'm not supposed to have these feelings. And that's a real emotional control strategy.
Yeah, yeah. The narrow range of feelings and some feelings are wrong kind of thing. Like, you're not allowed to feel uncomfortable with racist language.
Yes.
You're not allowed to feel uncomfortable with the idea that the person who is the president of the United States talks about grabbing women by the pussy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, you're a snowflake. Fuck your feelings. They are so direct about it. You're not allowed to have those feelings.
That's right.
But there are feelings that you're very much allowed to have, in fact, that you are supposed to have. You are supposed to have fear and hatred of the enemy. The outsider, which also goes back to Echo and fascism and that key idea, the us versus them. You have to feel fear and hatred. It's a requirement.
Yep.
And it's not only required, but it's nurtured and
absolutely
pushed.
And that if you don't feel, in the same way that if you feel concerns over using racist language, you're a snowflake. Mm-hmm. If you don't feel fear about the caravan of immigrants coming, that is also wrong. So very much your emotional range is determined.
Exactly. It's being controlled.
And there's a way that in terms of the escalation, once you cross those certain lines, it's very hard to leave.
Right.
And part of why it's hard to leave is because of shame of things you've done and believed and said. So gangs do this too, where like they make you do something that's so horrible that you like, you better beat somebody up, kill somebody, do something, like that's what the mob does. Because once you have been initiated in this way, there is no returning to this other side of society. And I think that that is very much something that the Trump cult engages in. It's very hard to come back from there once you have crossed that line of saying, I don't care about certain feelings. Oh, so you can never have them again.
Right? And in the same sort of bucket of emotional control is all of the gaslighting. Which is just, it's a key part of cult control, and obviously it's a major component of Trump's everything that he does. again, it's that the problem is always you. If you have a problem, if you are questioning or unsure about something, if you object to something, the problem is you. We saw that very clearly in Nexium. I loved it when there was one scene where Mark was talking to Keith, the cult leader, about some article that had come out that was calling him a cult leader and calling Nexium a cult. And Mark was saying, we got to do something about this. We got to get out ahead of it or answer back. We have to rebut it. And Keith was saying, no, that's fine. It's fine. Leave it out there. If somebody reads that and they think we're a cult and they don't want to come check us out, that's good. I don't want those people here. Yeah. I only want critical thinkers. I don't want people who are so naive and gullible that they would read an article calling us a cult and then not even investigate it for themselves.
Right.
And I was so floored by that flip, because what he was really saying was, we want people who are susceptible. And if you read an article that says I'm a cult and that makes you skeptical, then you're not susceptible.
We don't want you anyway. We don't want you. Yeah.
But he's calling that critical thinking.
But he deploys
thinking.
That language.
Yeah, he flips it around.
And it's something that actually was called the Nexium flip.
If you believe whatever Keith Raniere is shoveling, then you're a critical thinker. But if you believe what anyone else says about him, you're a mindless sheep, right?
And if you feel like what we're doing is wrong, you need an EM.
You need an EM, right?
You need that.
You object to this, you need to get it fixed. You need to figure out what's wrong with you.
Yes.
It's like an abusive relationship. It's always your fucking fault, whatever the other person does.
And that's something with Trump that has been
oh God.
Over and over and over and over again, that even when they acknowledge that they've done something wrong, it's like, look what you made me do. It's really,
yeah, I mean,
like,
first of all, he never acknowledges that he did anything wrong ever.
No.
But anyone, we've seen this so often, anyone who ever criticizes Trump or questions Trump, they are immediately attacked. And it's not just that they're attacked like for their looks or their energy level or whatever he's going to say about them, but also it's their motivation. They were out to get him from the start. They're never Trumpers. It's the deep state. It's the radical left. They're out to get him. You can't believe them. Even when it's someone who is in his inner circle that he supposedly trusted because he picks the best people and they worked with him for months or years and then they leave and they give an interview or write a book, whatever. They pen some piece in the Times that tells the truth about what's really going on. He attacks their motives. He talks about how this person came begging me for a job, crying, saying I'm the best, and I didn't give him a job, and now they want revenge. He creates this narrative where it's always that person's fault.
And it creates the echo chamber. I mean, that's why you see an escalation in cults, because as they move on in the years and they have fewer and fewer people who do critique them and provide a sounding board and provide, you know, they often, these people have people earlier in their lives who challenge them, question them. It's sort of like the way that older men get rid of their first wives and get like some younger woman who will just say, yes, daddy, whatever you say. Like at a certain point, those people who keep challenging them and calling them on their shit, like, I don't want those people. And so it creates this sort of echo chamber and this ramping up effect where the people who remain in his circle, they see what happens when you challenge him.
Exactly.
And so they know that they – and that's where you see all of these like politicians just humiliatingly groveling, saying like, yes, the president is the most masculine man I've ever met. And you're like, oh, because if they don't say that,
yeah,
they're going to get kicked out just like all these other people. So the gaslighting has this sort of institutional effect in all of these organizations.
It helps to instill the fear about leaving or questioning the leader. Irrational fears. And that's a classic cult shit.
So So the I of bite in Steve Hassan's bite model of mind control is information. In destructive cults, which is what he's calling it, these are destructive mind control. This is different from a lot of self-awareness. There are all kinds of techniques or groups that you can be a part of. Maybe there's a group you meditate with. Maybe there's a political group you work with. Like, right. A lot of these do similar things, but when it gets destructive, they're following this bite model of these various controls. So the control of information, with the withholding of information, the distortion of information, minimizing access to non-cult sources of information. Outsider information is bad. Insider information is the only information. Propaganda, the misquoting of outsider information.
Right, to take it out of context.
Taking it out of context so that they can kind of, and the it's the use of information to control the map of reality.
Yes. So when it comes to the NXIVM thing and the analogy between NXIVM and Trump, this is probably the one that stood out the most to me, because the NXIVM organization established an arm that they called the Knife. It was one of their like subsidiary companies that was, I think they said their mission was to analyze media accuracy, right? They would look at media and rate it based on its bias versus objectivity. And clearly the goal here was to discredit any media that were printing or saying negative things about Keith Raniere and NXIVM.
That's something that I find so amazing. It's like there's such an awareness that newspapers are going to find out that he was like fucking 12-year-olds, that he created an entire media organ that they like paid people real salaries.
Well, it also explains a lot about why Keith Raniere, who staffed his inner circle entirely with women whom he could control easily, took on Mark, what's his name?
Vicente.
Mark Vicente as his dear, dear male BFF, and really brought him in because Mark was a documentarian.
Yep.
He was a very skilled documentarian with a lot of success. And
a lot of legitimacy. Yeah.
Legitimacy. Yeah, exactly. So Keith clearly saw this as an opportunity to create his own propaganda. He had Mark videoing everything all the time, which wound up being the documentary The Vow. But in Keith's mind, it was going to be this amazing movie about how great Keith Raniere is and how he's definitely, certainly, absolutely not a cult leader.
Yes. And what's very interesting was at one point Mark Vicente says, like, saying somebody raped somebody in a news article, that language would be too charged. So it ends up being an article about, like, a man did a thing to a woman that she didn't like, that that even he later is realizing.
You mean in their rubric,
yeah,
in their rubric, criteria for how to rate.
Their rubric and criteria applies certain charge to language that's actually quite concrete language. But they're saying if it carries the charge, then it's biased.
So the analogy to Trump is very obvious.
Yeah, except Trump had a propaganda machine, which Keith Raniere could only dream of having. I mean,
it's true. It's true. And that existed before Trump came around.
Correct.
But it's certainly the whole conservative media apparatus, that entire thing was just right there for him.
And even, but before that, I think the thing that we see with Trump with the whole fake news is another one of these phrases that just like a build a wall or
just
lock
punctuates,
her up, punctuates the word garbage, is the constant discrediting of all press, of all journalism, of all journalists personally insulting and pointing out certain journalists who he knew were following him that would then get like threatened by people at the rallies. And he said this to Leslie Stahl before the 2016 election, when he was talking about why he insults journalists. He said to her, "You know why I do it? I do it to discredit you all and demean you all. So when you write negative stories about me, no one will believe you."
there you go. Told on himself as clearly as anyone ever could right there. But yes, that's his whole tactic. And it's so fascistic / cult-like, because fascism is a cult. Any news source that reports anything that is unflattering to him in any way, true or not true, is fake news. It's fake.
Yes.
It's all fake. Even when Fox News, who were his stalwart supporters for so long, if they had a poll that showed him being behind, it's garbage.
Yes.
Anything that he doesn't want to be true is garbage. And the effect of this, of course, is to create a situation where the only source of truth is Trump himself. The only source of truth that you can rely on is Dear Leader. Everyone else is liars. And so don't worry about it. Don't worry about these reports that he has done whatever he's being accused of doing. Don't worry about these investigative journalists who seem to be finding incriminating stuff. None of that is true. It can't possibly be true. It's the New York Times.
Right. Now, here's the side of it that gets us to this kind of last thing, which is that so cults kind of actively isolate you from information so that you're not challenged by anything that's going to challenge the map of reality. And there's something about that where he's saying you can choose what reality is. And with many of these control groups, the idea that you can change your reality, you can control your reality, it's all you. There's a side of it that's oppressive, obviously. Anything that you do wrong is you. But there's a side of it that's extremely exciting because it's saying you can choose your reality and be free. And all of these other things in the world, you don't have to worry about that because you can decide that that is all a lie. And that can feel like freedom. Like when you feel like, oh, I don't have to worry about poor people.
Right.
I don't have to worry about the people who produce my food. I don't have to worry about being a white supremacist and the ways that I have been responsible for promoting really horrible things.
I don't have to worry about COVID.
That's right.
And getting
That's
sick or
correct.
Making other people sick.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, yeah, he muddies the waters of truth so much. And the effect is either going to be that you just accept Trump as the only source of truth. Dear Leader will tell me what to believe. Or it's just, you just conclude that it's all nonsense. Well, they said this and they said that, so no one can know what's true. No one can know. No one knows. It can never be known.
And I think there's some of that that's very, like,
freeing, yeah.
Exciting, enticing, because you don't have to absorb the obligations of the world.
You're free from cognitive dissonance.
That's right.
You are free from it. Cognitive dissonance is painful. It's uncomfortable. It's physically uncomfortable to have two thoughts or pieces of information in your head that contradict. Nobody likes it. Nobody likes it. And he gives you permission to not ever experience it. Anything that contradicts what you already know or believe, but what's the difference? It doesn't count. You don't have to accept it.
And I think this brings us to the last, it's the first of the letters, but it's the last of the things we're going to get to, which is the B of bite, which is behavior.
Mm-hmm.
A high control, mind control organization wants to control your behavior, like literally what you're doing with your time. And I think that there's a way that initial excitement, I remember with Paul Haggis talking about Scientology, that you have that first big epiphany and then you stay in it because you want to feel that again. And the returns kind of get lower and lower as you keep going. I remember him saying like, yeah, it's not as good as it used to be, but you keep going.
But you keep going.
I think that's with all of these groups, even with like doing yoga, there's this, when you get a diagnosis, when you've been having like some kind of mental illness situation or physical illness situation, you get a diagnosis and there's something so fucking exciting about that. Like then it's all going to be fixed. And then you realize it's not all going to be fixed. Life is life. There are ups, there are downs.
Yeah, but it's going to take a lot of work.
It takes a lot of work.
It's going to be a journey.
The work is ongoing forever. You think you've made progress, and you have, but you still feel bad sometimes. Like, there is a way that all of these cult groups attempt to really try to pull you away from worrying about that. And the last place they do that is through behavior and the control of your behavior.
As we saw with Executive Success Program, the NXIVM program, you know, people would come in for their first seminar, their first three-day thing, and it would culminate with these EMs, which I can't even remember what EM stands for.
Exploration of meaning.
Exploration of meaning. So another fucking meaningless phrase.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the long and short of it is that the end of this process, by the end of this process, they have achieved some really great insight about why they can't stop smoking or get nervous when driving on the freeway or whatever the fuck the thing is that they have that they want to get over. And they feel an absolute sense of like, yeah, that emotional, not catharsis, but that that moment when it just seems like you've broken the door open.
Yes.
And everything is better for a moment.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be fine.
Everything's clear.
Clear.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I can figure all the shit out. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. This thing that was bothering you, that was a weight on you for so long, suddenly the answer to it is clear. And that's a really important moment that I guess cult experts call manufactured epiphanies.
Yes. And you have these epiphanies also when you do things like therapy, but therapists know to not say like, and now you've had this epiphany, you will no longer have any problems in your life.
Right. Like, or they say, now that you've had this epiphany, would you like to buy $7,000 worth of the next level of therapy?
That's correct. So a real therapist or somebody who's really like a moral sort of arbiter of these things will not try to exploit you in the moment of your epiphany.
Right.
That is not what these people do.
Right. That's what cults do. They give you this manufactured epiphany and then exploit you in that moment. And so in looking at how that is going on with Trump, what strikes me is that for Trumpists, that moment might be what the trolls online would call the red pill moment.
Yes.
That moment when suddenly you see the world like in the Matrix for what it really is. In the Trump case, maybe the QAnon reality is suddenly revealed to you and you get how Trump is the savior and this horrible conspiracy of evil, deep state, whatever is going on. Other people can't see it. But now you see it clearly, and I'm sure that that's a tremendous rush.
And there's another side to it, because what Trump doesn't have that a lot of these mind control cults has is a sort of one-on-one, you as an individual, I'm dealing with you as an individual. Like the thing that we hear over and over again about Keith Raniere is that he would listen to you. He's a really good listener.
Right.
You know,
right.
And all of these places have people there who are there to like, yes, tell me all about it. Like, Trump doesn't do that, but there's something else he does, which is when Trump says the thing you're not supposed to say, it triggers that kind of epiphanic excitement in people because they go, oh my God, he said the thing that I feel that I'm not allowed to say because it's bad. Mm-hmm. I am not bad. So
right.
The permission that it gives, the permission is a replacement for that very one-on-one manufactured epiphany. It's a permission for this inner self that all of these exterior forces are not allowing you to have or express explicitly.
And it goes to that idea that the person joining the cult feels like they are becoming free. They are casting off the shackles of a society. In this case, the shackles of a society that has told them that they can't be openly racist or xenophobic or whatever.
The shackles of a society that say that you have to wear a mask. if you right. might be sick. I mean, that right. to me is the biggest behavior control thing that we see, because behavior is the thing we kind of maybe see the least in the Trump, but it, until you start thinking about COVID.
Yeah.
And like, you don't have to quarantine. You don't have to wear a mask. That is your freedom. Like, you don't have to do any of that. It's absolutely behavior
control. Absolutely. Their behavior is being controlled there. And, you know, part of behavior control is also the amount of time you spend being indoctrinated. That doesn't have to mean being actively at a Trump rally. It just means the time you spend watching Fox News or going online to the Donald subreddit.
Or going down the Q hole. And this gets to a term that I heard in the Seduce documentary, high arousal activities. Mm-hmm. One of the things that a cult does, and we talked about it last week with all the Rajneesh people dancing and all this kind of stuff, that cults will have these high arousal activities that feel so good that you keep kind of chasing that high. And the Trump rally is a high arousal activity. I think going down the Q hole and realizing the entire society is built on a child abuse cult, like that is high arousal activity.
Absolutely.
And the danger of high arousal activities is that to keep its members engaged, a cult will escalate and escalate and escalate and escalate until there is no other option but some massive explosion. And that's what Helter Skelter was. That's what Jonestown was. That's what happened in Waco. That's what Heaven's Gate was. And I would argue, and I pray that it really is the last one, that's what the insurrection at the Capitol was.
Yeah, I hope that was that moment for the Trump cult. And that there's not more happening. But in retrospect, it's very easy to see how things... I shouldn't even say in retrospect, because we all saw it coming. Is there anyone who didn't see it coming? We could all see that that's where it was leading. It's only going to escalate, especially when your rhetoric escalates the way Trump's has.
Correct.
Yeah. So, it's a cult.
It's a cult.
All right, before we finish, I just want to quickly touch back on some of the big ideas around cults and mind control, because I think all of this talking about cults, Trump cult withstanding or not withstanding, it's important to note that we all live within this continuum of control and influence. None of us is totally experiencing like free will, where we just make all of our choices absolutely independently and are not controlled by anyone.
And that's a big part of the individualist fallacy. Like humans are social animals. We live in societies. Mm-hmm. And societies have rules to be managed as a group. Like groups have rules to manage themselves. So like, of course we don't live in full freedom, because we're animals, and that's just not how animals work. We live in an ecosystem of various behaviors.
True. And our minds are being controlled, so to speak, through all kinds of various means all the time.
There are
the norms of the society that we live in.
That are constantly shifting.
But there's also the education system, whatever education you may have had. There's advertising. There's all kinds of media that have all kinds of influence. I mean, I hope we've uncovered some of that, some of the work we've been doing on this show. There's peer pressure, social pressure. There's outright propaganda, which we get plenty of these days. And it sort of goes along a spectrum from like the mildest forms of influence to complete control, which you might see with like a dangerous cult, a high control group.
That's correct.
And there are complicated ideas here about free will versus, I don't want to say consent, but responsibility for one's own choices.
And I have to say, this is something I've been thinking about a lot. I think one of the biggest criticisms of the NXIVM documentary, certainly, but also one of the things that's kind of ongoing as we continue to live in the fallout of post-Me Too world and a place where it's harder for people to speak and deal, and we've talked about this, and also the fallout of a Black Lives Matter world, is that I think people have a hard time acknowledging how complicated consent is.
Yes.
I think that the vow and seduced really want to make the people who have escaped Nexium faultless, total victims.
Yeah. They want to emphasize that they're victims. And absolutely, there's a sense in which they are victims. They are victims. But there is also a sense in which they are adults capable of rational choices who made choices.
Yes.
And acted of their own free will, in the sense that no one physically forced them to do something. I mean, you could argue there was some blackmail going on there, but not all of them were even being blackmailed. And so, you know, brainwashing, as we think of it in the popular culture, the way we imagine it, it's not actually a thing. You can't take someone and change their brain in that way. But you can absolutely influence people. And that influence can range to a really, really powerful type of control, or maybe manipulation. You know, there's
absolutely
there's coercion, control, and then there's like manipulation, which is maybe a step down, but still very powerful.
And I think we want to hold the manipulators, we want to acknowledge the space for that. And I think that that's where a lot of the debate is. Well, he didn't make you do it. He didn't force you to do it. Well, if this is what the system is going to reward me for, and I'm trying to like have a career, have a relationship, like there's so many of these negotiations that we're making all the time. And I think that that's one of the things that a lot of these movements that I think Me Too and Movement for Black Lives, like they're trying to lay bare the constant negotiations that we're always making in a system that is misogynist, in a white supremacist system.
In a system that is
in a capitalist system
designed to control our thoughts, our behavior,
That's
our
correct.
Access to information.
That's correct.
And our emotions.
Yes.
We all are being controlled to some extent or another, and that's worth noting. It's also worth keeping in mind as we consider how to treat those who have been members of the Trump cult, and how to bring them back into society, the larger society, as controlling and manipulative as it may be. At least it's not that.
So one of the tactics that's supposed to be used is just a lot of asking open-ended questions.
Right. And just letting them spout their bullshit.
And just asking open-ended questions, like that's immediately setting up the me versus you, us versus them is not effective. I think that there is a way that one thing that connects the Trump cult with Nexium, because Nexium was multi-level marketing. It was very much like Amway model, pyramid system model. There is just a really interesting thread about how a lot of the women who have been the most susceptible to QAnon are also like stay-at-home moms who also do multi-level marketing. That the structure by which the sort of narrative is very controlling or gets them in is very similar to that structure, so it feels familiar to them. And I think that with all of these, you want to be part of something where you're useful to society, you get a paycheck, and it gives your life meaning. And that's what a lot of those multi-level marketing groups do. Like, here is a job and you're part of this community. And QAnon very much does that. And so does a lot of the kind of influencer, health food, healthy, goopy kind of stuff. Like
the wellness.
The wellness thing has a huge overlap with a lot of these groups. So we are not better than there is some influence technique in your life. Dear listener, that is only one or two clicks away from the Venn diagram is overlapping, whether you know it or not, with some of these same groups that get people to believe in QAnon, Trump, or any of these things.
So it doesn't help to be holier than thou. Mm-mm. We just try to be honest with ourselves and patient with all these fucking assholes.
Oh, God.
Who let all this happen.
God damn it.
At least it's over.
Oh, my God. Well, if you want to talk to us about how it feels, maybe we can all have a good cry together on the Sauce Speakeasy, which is our Discord channel that is only accessible to our patrons.
Yes. You could find out more about joining our Patreon at patreon.com/saucepodcast. And you can email us. We are saucepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on the Twitter and Instagram as @saucepodcast.
You can find me, Maya Garance, anywhere you're looking at Maya Garance's, looking at Maya Garance's, looking for Maya Garance's. I've had some vodka. Also,
how many have you had?
Just a couple, but you know I have very low tolerance. Also, though,
it looked like you were kind of downing them.
Well, no, they were mostly soda.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah.
You just never know with a vodka and soda.
It's hard to tell.
It's really hard to tell. So one thing I will share is that I really think you guys all need to go onto the Plague Archives right now, because I've had such a week with Louis Pasteur and sheep. I really think you need to come onto the Plague Archives.
That's on Instagram?
On the Insta.
Check out @PlagueArchives on Insta. Maya has been doing amazing work looking at the history of plagues in
the culture.
I have
a really special one for fucking Trump, let me tell you. For MLK Day, I got a special one.
You can reach me as @GynoStar on all the various platforms. Please do reach out. Share with us your thoughts and feelings. We're here for it.
We're not going to say fuck your feelings.
No, we only say fuck your feelings if you say fuck our feelings.
That's right. And then we say, well, yeah, fuck your feelings.
About our feelings. But unless that's what you're going to say, just reach out and let us know. So if there's other stuff you'd like us to ruin in 2021.
Oh my God, are we going to be able to actually just go back to ruining things people love as opposed to just digging ourselves out of the fucking hole of the Trump administration?
That's what I'm hoping for. Oh, that's my plan.
God.
We're just going to ruin the stuff you love. 2021,
baby.
Adios, amoebas.